Accidents are an unavoidable fact of life. Or are they? In this podcast, we discuss current events through one personal injury lawyer's perspective. In each episode, we'll focus on one event and attempt to answer the oftentimes not-so-simple question, who's to blame? I'm your host, Jonathan Ratchick.
This podcast is sponsored by the law firm of Kramer & Levy & Ratchick, PLLC, and is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as legal advice and does not create an attorney-client relationship. If you think you might have a lawsuit, you should contact an attorney.
The coronavirus continues to ravage New York. Heading into the last week of April, almost 300,000 people across New York State have been diagnosed with the virus, with close to 17,000 deaths being reported. In New York City alone, and despite the imposition of strict social distancing measures, more than 11,000 people have died from the disease. Overwhelmed by the sheer number of fatalities, makeshift morgues have been set up outside local area hospitals. And to ease the burden on hospitals and staff, the city's Office of Chief Medical Examiner recently announced that it would provide temporary storage of decedents until families and funeral homes could make arrangements for final disposition. The city's offer, however, came with a catch. After only 2 weeks, unclaimed bodies would be buried in a mass grave on Hart Island, a remote island in the Long Island Sound on which more than a million dead New Yorkers are buried. What happens if the city buries someone before their family has a chance to claim them? Or without their knowledge altogether, what's the city's legal responsibility under these circumstances? In this episode of The Blame Game, we explore the city's potential legal liability in burying unclaimed bodies on Hart Island, and for depriving surviving family members of the chance of holding a funeral and saying their last goodbyes. We're also going to be speaking with Lisette Ferreira, an elder law attorney at Meenan & Associates, to talk about the things you can do to prevent getting buried in a potter's field. Now, the starting point for any such discussion is the common law right of sepulcher. Under this ancient doctrine, the surviving next of kin has a right to the immediate possession of a decedent's body for preservation and burial. Given the sensitive nature of these cases, damages are presumed and will be awarded against any person who unlawfully interferes with the right or improperly deals with a decedent's body. The rule has been applied to both physical mutilation of the body, such as with unauthorized autopsies, as well as cases where there's no physical injury to the body, but only an unlawful interference with the surviving kin's right to the body, such as where the remains are inadvertently disposed. So who's to blame when the city of New York buries a coronavirus victim on Hart Island? That all depends on whether the city made any effort to contact the decedent's next of kin before doing so. The medical examiner's office has what is called an outreach investigations unit, responsible for performing searches for next of kin. Arguably, if the outreach investigations unit performs a reasonably diligent search in locating next of kin and is unable to do so, there would be no liability on the part of the city if the decedent's body was buried on Hart Island. And this is the issue around which a lot of the litigation involving misplaced corpses revolves. Because what constitutes a reasonably diligent search? How is the city performing the search? With whom are the city employees speaking? What records or databases are they searching? How many times is the city attempting to locate or contact someone? Are they genuinely calculated to find someone, or is the city just going through the motions? As you can probably expect, in many of these cases, the city cannot demonstrate that it conducted a reasonably diligent search for a decedent's next of kin, and that opens the city up to legal liability. And I would argue that the city's exposure to liability does not simply end when a decedent's remains are interred on Hart Island. Because what happens if, after that 2-week period goes by, a surviving family member shows up to collect the body of a deceased loved one? That someone might not have come forward for so long is understandable, given that so many New Yorkers are socially distancing themselves and perhaps not checking in on one another as frequently as they did before. Although the city is supposed to catalog and properly identify the bodies it buries on Hart Island so that they can be disinterred, that's just asking for trouble down the road. And probably why the Brooklyn Borough President was recently demanding that the city and state enact new laws to ensure that such bodies are properly identified. Because if the city cannot comply with a surviving family member's right to possession of a loved one's remains, they will have still violated the right of sepulcher, even if the body was properly buried on Hart Island in the first place, and will have further compounded a family's grief and desire to provide final repose to their loved one. Now, I'm really excited because for the first time ever on The Blame Game, we have a guest.
Want to introduce everyone to Lisette Ferreira. Hi there, Lisette.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Doing well. How you doing?
I'm good, and I'm very honored to be the first guest of your podcast.
Well, we are equally honored to have you as our first guest. So, Lisette is an attorney at the law firm of Meenan & Associates, where she serves as the chair of the firm's elder law practice group. And Lisette, can you just tell us a little bit more about the type of work that you do over there or what the firm does?
Sure, Jonathan. I am an estate planning and elder law attorney. As an estate planning attorney, I help people put their legal affairs in order and to plan ahead in events of either incapacity or death. So I help them to develop an estate plan, put in place basic documents that will let people know what their wishes are in case they become incapacitated or for when they pass. So these would include...
I was going to say, can you give us some examples of what documents you're talking about?
Sure. So these documents would include just as foundational documents, a healthcare proxy, appointing somebody to make healthcare decisions for you. So in addition to the healthcare proxy, there's a power of attorney and a last will and testament.
So, you know, in this podcast, you know, in this episode, we've been talking about having documents in place to prevent a situation arising whereby the city or whereby your remains or the remains of your loved one would get buried in a potter's field, you know, without. And how do these documents prevent that from happening?
So there is one additional document, and it is called an appointment of agent to control disposition of remains.
What exactly does an ACDR do?
An ACDR is a document where you write down, put in writing on a piece of paper, who you want to control your remains and what happens to them after your death. And you also tell that person what your wishes are, which would mean specifying, do you want to be cremated or would you prefer to be buried?
And would this document identify either next of kin or persons with whom, I guess, authorities can get in contact with in the event that they need to make these, I guess, end-of-life decisions for you?
At this point, we're talking about, you know, post-mortem, so after the end of life.
Post-mortem decisions for you.
Right. At this point, this document should have the name, address, and telephone number of the person who should be contacted about your remains and what happens to your remains. And that should be spelled out. And, you know, you mentioned next of kin, Jonathan. So, you know, that's the default is the next of kin. But this is a document where you get to choose who you want to control your disposition, your remains, or the disposition of your remains after your passings. There are certain people who have priority as, you know, next of kin under the law, but those people may not be the people that you want to be in charge of what happens to your remains. Thinking of the scenario of where you are estranged from your spouse or perhaps have severed a relationship with a child.
And I assume that this is something that the attorneys at Meenan & Associates do on a regular basis.
This is certainly an important part of our practice, is helping people with their estate planning and putting these documents in place, something that, you know, particularly now in this time of the pandemic, people are reaching out and thinking about more and more. It's coming to the forefront that this is something that they, you know, that's important for them to think about and start putting in place.
And just one last question. How would having these documents prevent someone from getting buried in a potter's field? So I imagine that in a lot of these situations, the municipal or city employees are having a difficult time even identifying either surviving relatives or next of kin, which necessitates having someone burying someone in a potter's field just because they can't find anybody to make these decisions. I imagine, you know, we don't go walking around with our last will and testament. Is there a way that, you know, we can have this information at the ready in the event that it's needed?
It is. It's a fair point. So I think with both a healthcare proxy and the appointment of agent to control disposition of remains, I think it's important that people carry around, you know, a wallet-sized version that just sets forth very clearly in the, you know, who is the person and how do you reach that person? Because as sure. you point out, in these critical times when it's a time to, you know, you're coming into the emergency room, for example, and an end-of-life decision has to be made, or, you know, we're dealing with the question of what happens to your remains now, and there's no time to go and locate these documents in a safe deposit box or in somebody's home. So having, you know, a wallet-sized mini version in your wallet with the immediate information available is a way to help minimize the chances of ending up in Potter's Field.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because, you know, the more I think about it, you know, with the city now stating that they're going to, you know, start transporting the remains of people who have just only been in storage, for lack of a better word, for 2 weeks. I mean, you really think about it in the large scheme of things, 2 weeks really isn't a long period of time. There's sometimes, you know, there might be weeks on end before family members speak to one another. So, you know, 2 weeks is not a lot of time before some really important decisions regarding your remains can be made without involving people who probably should be involved in the process. Your thoughts? Or
yes, I agree with you, Jonathan, that, you know, 2 weeks, 2 weeks is not a long time in general. 2 weeks now, in this context, is really not a long time at all, because it's quite difficult. People are in their homes. People are their mobility and ability to get out is much more limited. Ability to access different things and different modes of transportation is much more difficult. So it's really not a lot of time.
Well, I really want to thank you, Lisette, for coming on this episode of The Blame Game. I want to wish you and your family the best. I want everyone to stay safe, and hopefully we'll see you again when all of this is behind us, sooner rather than later.
Yes, thanks for having me, Jonathan. Stay safe.
Thank you for listening to The Blame Game. This episode was brought to you by Kramer, Dunleavy, and Ratchick PLLC. Come check us out at kdrpilawyers.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, head on over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. It's very much appreciated. Thank you, and have a great day.